Chapter 17. I scrubbed and cleaned and was beginning to polish the windows when I glanced out at a car which certainly looked out of place in Levi, Oklahoma. It was a late-model silver BMW convertible, and it turned into our driveway. I tried to keep from salivating. What a beautiful automobile. The man who stepped out of the car looked as out of place in our town as did his BMW. He wore stylishly flared burgundy trousers and a silvery sport coat the same shade as his car. A pale pink shirt completed his ensemble. The stranger carried a shiny briefcase with a clasp that caught the afternoon sun. He came to the bottom step of the porch, paused, then reached down and wiped the dust off his loafers. Grandpa George's voice echoed from my childhood. Never trust a man who wears a suit and girly shoes. From where I stood, I guessed those shoes were made from the hide of some hapless alligator. I ran downstairs. The man stepped back when I opened the wood door. The storm door stayed firmly latched. In a soft voice and flashing movie star white teeth, he asked,
"Mrs. Campbell."
Before I could reply, he held up a business card.
"I am J. Smith Rowley. I am an attorney representing a client interested in Ben Ventress and his estate."
"Huh?" I asked, just as Mom came up behind me. Frowning at him, she asked, "Who? Who did you say you represent?" Smiling, he said,
"I don't believe I said, ma'am. May I come in?"
J. Smith Rowley's colorless eyes seemed to slide everywhere. When he realized that we were about to refuse to let him in, he hurriedly added,
"I have a document here that I think you'll be interested in seeing."
Mom unlatched the storm door. We stood aside for him to enter, but once again, I stayed close to my dad's hidden gun in the bookcase. Sitting down on the sofa without being invited, J. Smith Rowley snapped open his briefcase and placed it on the floor. A diamond ring on his finger looked as if it cost more than my mother's house. Mom sat in her rocker, facing our visitor, while I stood against the bookcase. If I had anything to say about it, this man was going back out the door as quickly as he came in. He had better talk fast. Rowley cleared his throat.
"I am here as the legal representative of an heir of Benjamin W. Ventress, and as such, I have the authority to speak on my client's behalf."
"Interesting information, this." "Please go on," I said.
"I have here a petition that I am prepared to file, asking that the court appoint me as the representative of the estate for Mr. Ventress's true heir. Due to the fact that Mr. Ventress died intestate and..."
"Wait a minute. Intestate?" Mom asked, looking at the lawyer as if he had just crawled out of a crack in the corner of the room. Before Mr. Rowley could open his mouth, I said, "It just means that Ben died without a will." Frowning at my parent, I briefly shook my head, hoping she wouldn't say anything about the will Sky sent. The lawyer nodded.
"Actually, my purpose in coming is to ask you two ladies to help the proceedings move along by signing a document for me."
We waited. The smile that flitted across his narrow face was oily enough to grease wagon wheels.
"This is a very unusual situation, because although we all know that poor Mr. Ben Ventress is dead, there was never a death certificate since the body disappeared before medical examiner could arrive on the scene. So, because of that horrible circumstance. And what a shock it must have been, dear ladies.
He gave us a look that I guessed was meant to be sympathetic.
The judge will require that we have a signed statement from both of you to present to the court, along with this petition from the heir, as proof the deceased is actually dead. It's just a small, gracious gesture that will help expedite things.
My mother smiled sweetly. What makes you think we'd want to be gracious? Mr. Rowley's eyebrows drew down. So did his mouth.
I am certain when you stop to consider, you'll realize that it is the only thing to do. As responsible members of society, you'll want to do everything possible to see that Mr. Ventress's property is handled in the way he would have wanted.
If J. Smith Rowley had said gullible instead of responsible members of society, it would have described his evident opinion of us. Stepping toward him, I said, "That goes without saying. May I see the petition that names the true heir, as you put it?" Rowley raised his eyebrows.
"Please, Mrs. Campbell, you should know that I can't divulge that."
"I know nothing of the sort," I said. Mom crossed her arms over her chest. "You are wanting us to buy a pig in a poke, Mr. Rowley."
"A pig in a..." "That's quaint, Mrs. Tucker. No, what I need are your signatures, and then I'll be running along. Won't take a minute."
As he spoke, he pulled an official-looking document backed in heavy gray paper from his briefcase.
"I'll be happy to notarize your statements right now, so you won't even have to make a trip to the bank for a notary public."
"And what if we don't choose to do that?" I asked. Rowley's tone became threatening. He half closed his eyes.
"Then I'll just have to return another day with a court order that will require you to sign."
He would do exactly that, I had no doubt. Although I had never heard of an estate being probated which belonged to an absentee body, I knew enough about the laws of probate and inheritance to know that this man was likely following the correct procedure. Mom rubbed her forehead as if she was massaging away an ache, and I spoke sharply to Mr. Rowley. "We understand that Mr. Ventress lived in a small house in the country and drove an old truck. He owned 10 acres by the river. None of that is worth much." I watched Rowley's expression as I spoke and found out what I wanted to know. He squinted at something above my head, cleared his throat, and rubbed the bridge of his nose. A lie was coming.
"Actually," he said, "my client knows that Ben Ventress's estate isn't valuable monetarily. It's just that he feels an obligation to undertake all the responsibilities associated with Mr. Ventress's earthly belongings, few though they may be. In fact, Mr. Ventress told my client some time before his death that he intended to make a will and name my client as the beneficiary. So you understand, of course, that my client is simply wanting to carry out Mr. Ventress's wishes, as I'm sure you want to do also."
If we signed those documents, Rowley's client would be free to bulldoze his way through probate court. He would have no restraints in searching for any treasure that might be on Ben's farm. Rowley hadn't mentioned any Western oil lands. Did he know about them? Were they important to his client? Rowley pushed a little harder.
You are aware, of course, Mrs. Campbell, that you and your mother's statements about Mr. Ventress's body are already in official police records, so it's not as though you'd be admitting anything people don't already know.
My mother's chin jutted out, reminiscent of a bulldog's. Well then, why don't you just use those official police records? Ignoring her, Rowley turned to me.
What do you say? Shall I come back next week with a court order?
Oh, I don't think that'll be necessary, Mr. Rowley, I said. I'm sure you can understand our hesitancy about signing a legal document we know nothing about. Neither of us understands the law, but we can work our way through this. Mom looked shocked. She seemed about to speak, then pressed her lips together. Smiling at Rowley, I opened the door. Just put that affidavit you brought on the sofa as you are leaving. We want time to look it over. Rowley tried to become friendlier, but it was obvious he had not had much practice.
Well, that's mighty fine, ladies.
His good old boy demeanor was in high gear.
I'll just leave this with you and be on my way. It's a pleasure to get to know you, ladies.
He snapped the briefcase shut and stood.
Mrs. Campbell, I've read several of your AP news stories, and you've always done a fine job. Mighty fine.
His eyes narrowed.
Do you plan to return to your reporter's job soon?
So, he was wondering how long I'd be a burr under his saddle. I wasn't about to tell him my plans, especially since I didn't have any. Actually, Mr. Rowley, I said, I have a contract with a Dallas newspaper to write a bunch of feature stories, and that's something I can do pretty much anywhere. I may be in Levi for several months, or even longer. Rowley nodded as he went out on the porch. Striding to his car and opening the door, he bent over and flicked another speck of dirt from his shoe. My grandpa's criteria for sizing up a man was right on the money. Locking the door behind him, I said, I thought that ruse about giving us time to think things over was the best way to get him to leave. The gentlest way, anyhow. My mother drew a shaky breath. I'm going to have to file Ben's will for probate. I see that. There's nothing else to do. I don't want Ben's money nor his property. I don't think I have any right to it, but I sure can't let somebody else get his hands on it. Ben wouldn't want that. Who is this mysterious client that Rowley represents, anyway? I asked, following my mother into the kitchen. She measured coffee and water and soon had the coffee pot going. We sat down at the table to wait. Maybe Ben's killer is using another tactic to get at the gold. Maybe he's decided going through a lawyer is safer than adding another couple of murders to his list, I said. So you think Ben's killer is the same as the supposed heir? Could his client be Jim Clendon? Mom asked. I've never had a problem with Jim, but you don't trust him, do you?
Only about as far as I could throw him, Mom.
Maybe Ray Drake, or Hammer Ventress, or... who? In thinking about possible candidates as a murderer, we have a pretty wide field to choose from. Ray Drake tops the list, actually. A Chicago hitman? He probably reads the papers. Maybe he's heard a little bit about the possibility that Ben may have been rich. Yes, a hitman would think nothing of murdering a few more people. The coffee pot was still, so I went to the cabinet and pulled out two cups. Mom shivered. It still gives me chills to think Drake was sitting right here in my house. Putting two napkins on the table, I set down our full cups. He could be a tobacco chewer, too. However, that red man wrapper we found clearly points toward Jim. I'm sure his deputy's salary isn't that great.
Maybe he has decided to go through a lawyer to try and become suddenly rich.
Maybe the murderer is Raleigh himself, Mom said quietly.
Could be. Or, bad as you hate to think about it, Mom, Jasper may be involved some way. Coffee sloshed from Mom's cup.
I can't believe you said that, Darcy. That boy is as honest as his mother, and Pat and I have been friends for a long time.
Okay, Mom, sorry I mentioned it. She got up and went to the kitchen window.
That rose bush is so pretty this year, she said. Ben always liked to putter around in his flowers. Darcy, I don't understand why any of this is happening. Ben didn't ever bother anybody. He was happy out there in his house by the river. I could see, though, that he had changed in the last few weeks. Maybe about the time he went to New York City. He was worried that something was going to happen to him.
I got up to stand beside her. Do you think he knew the person who was a threat to him?
Looking back, I believe he did. I wish he had told me, or somebody else who he suspected.
I wish he'd kept you entirely out of the whole thing, I muttered. If his handwritten will holds up in court, you are going to be a wealthy woman, whether you want to be or not, and more of a mark for a killer. And if Rowley manages some sleight of hand, somebody else is going to get his hands on a lot of wealth.
My head is splitting, Mom said. If I am declared Ben's legal heir, it's going to make somebody awfully mad.
Yes. I think we need some legal advice, Mom. She nodded.
As soon as I take a couple of aspirins, I'm going to make an appointment with Jackson Connor.
I had not seen Mom's lawyer friend since my return to Levi. If anybody could give us direction on which way to go, it was Mr. Connor.